But yeah, so if all right, so in this A-team, you know, situation, who am I? Am I Murdoch?
Your face.
Or, yeah.
Please see your handsome beard and so faux hawk.
There's, yeah, right. There's face, and then there's, who's the leader, dude?
Hannibal? Fucking A, Brian.
Yeah, sorry. It's been a while.
I'm then, obviously
who's
Hannibal.
Murdoch? That's where I'm confused now.
Gabe is Murdoch when he's here.
Murdoch is like the bananas guy.
Yeah,
like,
Murdoch's the helicopter. Oh my God,
yeah,
dude.
He's legit crazy.
Podcast over.
No, I've watched A-Team a ton of times. I just can't remember the character names. Sorry, buddy.
God.
Which one was Bradley Cooper?
Warman!
Hey, we're back! What's up, dudes? It's Warman's episode 2, season 2, volume 2,
2014.
2002? No, no. Jesus.
227?
Were podcasts a thing in 2002?
Do you remember that show?
I don't. I don't know what you're talking about.
Really? 227. Oh, it had freaking, what's her name?
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
What was she in? Shit.
She's one of those ladies with just one name.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
It's like fucking.
Was she in Coming to America?
No.
Holy fuck, that's my favorite.
227 TV series.
Oh, man. This is good.
Nell Carter's in it.
Nell Carter. All right. Yeah.
That's not the one that was just on the screen. What the hell is her name?
Yeah.
Oh, Nell Carter was just a guest star. I'm sorry. Jack Hay. Jack Hay.
Yeah, all right.
She's so sassy.
So if anyone's still listening, it's... fucking Jack Hay.
She had that...
Fuck. We're just dead in the water right now because everybody hates us.
227 was baller as shit.
So anyway, so on the docket today, we got like four things theoretically lined up that we want to chit-chat about. And it's just me and Bill today. Jay can't make it. We may bring in Robo Jay at some point, but
it's got the old grandma from Friday.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. But when she's not old,
no, she's still pretty old. There,
she's like
1,000 on Friday.
Yeah,
yeah. So right, we're gonna talk a little bit about the Imperator spoilers because Bill's got a double Phoenix boner.
No, I'm not that excited.
Yeah, well, we need to talk about that because I need to yell at you, I guess.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Michigan Cup event coming up here pretty shortly, so we've been talking a lot about, like, almost incessantly, really. We got to launch a lot of work, and talking about building list pairs for our sort of new factions. When I say new, you're playing Rhett,
mm-hmm.
which you're not new to, obviously.
No.
But there's so much new shit,
it feels new, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're incorporating a ton of the new stuff. Partially because it's new and shiny, and also because it just expands.
I think it's really good.
Yeah, just the list building options. I mean, like the Iris threes and the Thanes, and you know, there's a lot of meat on that bone. All of a sudden,
yep.
And then we also want to do a little topic about SR 2014, not like a review, but just a couple scenarios and a couple specific rules that we think interact cool with those scenarios. But yeah, so I guess let's talk about Imperatus real quick. What do you not like, I guess, is my question. Obviously, the whole card is
and
not
I'm not saying
yet.
I don't like him, because that would be silly. I'm assuming he's going to be 10-plus points.
He's definitely in the plus. He's not going to be 10 points.
You don't
think
so?
He's going to be 11 or 12, yeah. He's supposed to be an Apotheosis Jack. So
he's supposed to be a Death Jack,
a Thunderhead
Avatar.
Behemoth, Avatar, yeah, those guys, right? They're all minimum 11.
The only gripe I have with that guy, the only problem I have with him is POW 17 still.
Yeah.
It really hurts, man, to not be able to get above 19 without bringing a Hyperion.
Yeah, but it's two.
Yeah, but still. So I can, if I pay 3 focus, I can get 5 POW 19s.
Yeah. And Matt 7.
I guess.
They could throw us a crazy curveball and make him like Matt 8. I doubt it, honestly.
Yeah, I doubt it, too.
He's minimum Matt 7.
He's definitely he's probably better than Phoenix. He loses Arc Node. He loses Combustion. Both those things are really, really what defines Phoenix for me.
Yeah, you know the his gun.
We're assuming he loses Arc Node. I guess we can't really say that for sure.
Yeah, Arc Node advantage would be under, like, he's not an Arc Node. It'd be on that card. The way they print in the books, it would say Arc Node under Imperatus there.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Well, it doesn't show the whole page. It shows
that's
down
true.
To the top of sidestep.
The symbol, any of the symbol abilities they put at the top. I'd have to look at a book to be sure, but I'm pretty sure people have said there's no way he's an Arc Node, but I could be wrong. I'm curious about his gun. He's got a POW 14.
Yeah.
And he's got
Probably exactly the same as the Halo canon, honestly.
Well, it's got a different name.
That's true.
So I'm going to guess it has some other shit it does. But, I mean, really, the really exciting thing
is Phoenix Protocol.
Is Phoenix Protocol and Sidestep.
Yeah.
I mean, Sidestep is just an awesome rule on any heavy with two awesome reach attacks. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, Mulligan is amazing. Mulligan's, it's not the same faction, but.
No, definitely not.
But, I mean, there's some decent movement shenanigans in Rhett. And, you know, 5 mat, 7 pound 19s to get to something, it's not bad.
No, I don't disagree with you. I just, man, I really am leaning on the not getting any kind of upgrade in that PS.
The other thing, I don't 100% blame you for that. I just don't see them giving Rhett, who has like the easiest +2 power buff, a dude with 2 reach pow 18s.
Yeah, but +2 power.
They already
it's easy.
Once.
That's great, but what did they fuck up? What do you mean?
They made Menoth once. They made the Avatar 11.
Yeah,
points.
And that's cool. And he gets up to 21.
Yeah, yeah. And he's what, base mat 8, I think. So
yeah.
He goes to mat 10 for
yeah.
some goddamn reason. Yeah.
Just saying he's 19 with the +2 and yeah, it's good. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. Does this guy suddenly start wrecking heavies 1-to-1?
Well, I mean,
don't you want to at least threaten to do that with your jacks?
I think he does. I mean,
I know I want to do that.
Like, all right, let's play the EV game for a second, right? Against like a 12, we'll say a 12, 18, 30 box heavy.
Okay, so like a vanilla shitty heavy.
Yeah, or like we'll say 12, 19, 30 box.
Okay.
That's a Titan Gladiator. That's okay. That's considered a 12, 19 is actually a really good stat line.
Yeah.
There's a lot of 19 armor, but it's usually attached to 11 defense.
Mm-hmm.
12, 19 is pretty fucking good. And that's another thing we got to talk about. His def is higher too, which is really good. It changes the EV so much. The expected value, I guess I should explain for anybody who doesn't know that term. I mean, super easy way to calculate that is just take like, he's armor 19. So you're straight dice, assuming
you always assume that the Arcanist is involved.
Put the sauce on him, right? So at 5 attacks, not including it, let's just say, we'll take charge out of the equation for a second.
So you just walked up to him.
Yeah, he walked. That's 35 damage. 5 sevens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're timesing that by your to hit percentage. And that's where the EV gets skewed by the mat 7 is now you're rolling 5s, which I think are something like 87% or something like that.
Yeah, I
don't know. Pretty
high. Off the top of my head.
6s are like 75% roughly, I think. So let's say it's like 80-something percent. So you're just taking that 35 times 80-something percent, which almost is 30 boxes. So you're almost one-rounding a Gladiator on average dice. And this is red. I mean, you can soften shit up.
Yeah.
The thing about him, though, Bill, that it doesn't kind of matter if he doesn't kill a heavy. Because there's a lot of chances where if he gets to alpha and he doesn't kill a heavy, even like a bronze back or, you know, or maybe not a bronze back per se, but like a Gladiator or whatever, that thing gets, you know, each branch healed. So it's back to full.
Yeah.
Beats the shit out of him, probably doesn't kill him because Phoenix Protocol.
Maybe. Phoenix Protocol is definitely good.
It's basically the equivalent of having something like 45-ish boxes. And it could waste an attack. Like if you've got 2 boxes left and they hit you with like, and roll like a 10, it's like, well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got that stop gap, like a dismount or something where it's like, it doesn't. If you have 1 box left and you still got to waste 10 damage to do it.
Yep, for sure.
No, I mean, that's definitely good. It's something I'm going to have to see him play.
Yeah.
But it really, if you gave me my choice, I feel like what's missing in the heavy selection, I would rather have a lesser jack that cost less, but was still, you know, character-worthy points efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Something in the, I feel like we really need something in the 6, 7, 8 point range. It's like all the good heavies are 10 points. It's just 10. You're either taking 10 points or 20 points or 18 points with a Hyperion.
If you look across War Machine outside of Menoth and Convergence, that's just sort of the issue with heavies.
Is it?
Yep. It's you like think? I've got 3 focus allocated to 1 heavy. It's either going to be a Colossal or it's going to be arguably, if not a character, it's going to be a Banshee, you know, a Defender, Centurion, you know, I'm trying to think of other, like, that 9-10 point bracket is where,
yeah,
you know, a Beast 09, right? As, is it a Juggernaut or a Beast 09? Well, Juggernaut's okay, and there's value there.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, you know, if you're running one Jack, and this is kind of, you know, we're beating a dead horse on this one, but you take that 10-point-ish investment.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be an Apotheosis Jack, so it was not going to be a cheap beater, right?
Right.
They tried to that. Give you a cheap beater with, like, the Sphinx and stuff yeah. like that, and that's okay. But I'm really – I feel like looking at just the stuff they spoiled, the sidestep the Phoenix protocol, Phoenix Field obviously is a sweet rule, and the Def 13 with I would guess something in the more than 32 box range. Like, he could have as much as, like, 36 even.
The field is probably going to be 10, I'm guessing.
It could be more.
Because it's called a Phoenix Field, and the Phoenix is 10.
Yeah.
But and the grid looks like it's the same as a Phoenix. I'm expecting that to be exactly the same.
Hyperion doesn't have Phoenix Field, right? He doesn't just, like,
No, he does not heal it back.
But the Hyperion has more.
Actually,
than 10,
I think
right?
the Aspis has, finger quotes, Phoenix Field, and it's not the same size, is it?
I think it might be.
Actually, it is.
It has an insane amount of boxes for light. That's a really good light. I mean, it doesn't do much until late game when it's like punch, punch, punch. But.
Yeah. Well, it shield guards.
Yeah. I mean, defensively, it's awesome. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, the stuff on the card that I can see, you know, 30-something boxes plus the Phoenix Protocol plus regening D6, Def 13... Double PAL 17 reach swords.
Yeah, no, I don't want to be like, no, I can't believe that asshole doesn't like it, because it's good for
no,
sure.
No, I'm hoping for something like.
I was hoping for something
potent.
Different, I guess.
Yeah, you were hoping for like an ultra beater, like a, you know, something with like PAL 15 armor piercing sword or something like, you know, something like that could.
It would be awesome if it was something that's more. I'm more sure this thing can go kill. Like, you know, yesterday or the day before I was playing and I'm looking at a Kodiak going, my Phoenix can't fucking kill that Kodiak.
Yeah.
There's no way. I have to like kill him halfway and hope my Phoenix can finish him.
Yeah.
it would be nice to have something that it's a little more reliable.
You could always just like walk 7.6 inches away from the Kodiak though.
That's true. Or like I did, just sit there with Polarity Shield on it.
Yeah, that too. Polarity Shield's pretty sweet against those guys. Get that 4.5-inch threat going.
Yep.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot more card that probably isn't shown because it's an Apotheosis Jack, and my guess is it's going to be 12 points.
Yeah, maybe there's a crazy imprint or something on the bottom.
It looks like an 11-point Jack with what it's got, and I think it's a pretty solid 11-point Jack, mostly because of Phoenix Protocol. I think without Phoenix Protocol, it's just a melee version of a Phoenix and isn't that good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get what you're saying, and hopefully when they full spoil, you'll be happy with it. But I think the Phoenix Protocol angle, that direction they went in, the recursion with a Warjack, is really interesting because it doesn't exist anywhere, really.
Yeah. It's kind of like built-in respawn or something, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the Wither Shadow can bring a Jack back, and that's about the only Warjack that, right? I mean, there's no other Warjack recursion in the game that I can think of.
Yeah. There's, what's the spell called? Reconstruct.
Oh, yeah, and Convergence, right. Yep. Okay, well, this is the second instance, I guess, or third if you count Wither Shadow making a heavy out of your heavy, which is LOLs. So, yeah.
I guess if I can't alpha and kill a heavy, I guess you make a good point that there's a fine chance the Phoenix lives through the counter punch and then finishes the job. I'm sorry, the Imperatus.
Yeah. Well, and it sets up weird trades too, where you're like, here's Imperatus, and you like almost completely kill a heavy, and then they have to throw a tremendous amount of resources into removing Imperatus.
Yeah.
And then you have this like, you have one heavy that you almost killed, and then you have this like pocket of stuff that they use to kill your Imperatus, and a lot of times, like, you know, Rhett can counter hit pretty hard with some of, like, you know, Stormfall Archers and you know, just the various guns in the faction. And then,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about it. That dude with Eviro seems fucking bananas. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And Phoenix.
Having sidestep on a tuned up Jack that's got, you know,
God, synergy.
A five knock synergy chain seems pretty awesome.
Yeah, man. It's boner jams. Super good. Super
just sidestepping, sidestepping deep, and then hitting with, you know, pal 23s or something.
Yeah,
Matt 11 or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Matt and banana. Yeah, Matt crazy. Who knows?
That'd be nice.
Yeah, maybe. And who knows? Maybe he'll have like a funny rule, like assault or something. And then that you know, with a pal 14 gun, that might put the math up like to where you reliably remove heavies. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like Rhett doesn't have like range knockdown or like a couple of shots from this random, you know. Yeah. Snowballs, Major Strike Force, whatever, that ding the five boxes off and make the math better. So,
yeah, I get it. And I'm not trying to, like I said, I'm not trying to be a whiny baby about it.
No, you just were hoping for a certain style of model and you got a different one, potentially, it seems like.
Which I still think is good.
Yeah.
After you pointed out that Phoenix Protocol fills up the fucking field, too.
Yeah.
I didn't see that the first time
around. I did the same thing. The first read, I was just like, oh, it's...
I was like, whoopee, four more boxes, and he doesn't move, so they have to hit me one more time.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to remove those last four, unless you, like, were using your last attack to kill it or something. But
yeah.
But yeah, so, all right, well, that guy should be cool, and maybe by the time we release this, he might even be fully released, so who knows. Hopefully we're recording in the future a little, but not too bad. Projecting our recordings forward. You're trying to get one in the can before you release any, so, or a couple in the can, I should say.
Yeah.
So, you want to go into like talking about pairings, or you want to talk about the SR stuff?
Let's do the SR stuff first.
Okay. Let me pull up the packet here.
I guess to lead into this, the very first time I played Steamroller 2014, played Incursion, and I was playing Rask. And we realized how much closer those flags are to the edge and how awesome ambush is.
Oh, God.
In that situation. Now, those incursion flags, not only do they encourage your caster to get on the outside flag, they also are in charge range of everything that has ambush. Even to contest that flag, you're in ambush charge range.
Yeah, yeah. We're just kind of mathing that out. And it's, you pretty much, even if your caster, like just the edge of their, well, then they're trying to dominate anyway. But if you've got, let's say not a caster, like you have a heavy just towing it, right? And he's towing it at the furthest point from, it still means that like the majority of a Bogtrog unit could get him.
And I think the more common than a heavy is to just throw like your one random solo over there to contest.
Hopefully it's not an incorporeal solo, right?
Well, in Bogtrog situation, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know the only ambusher with a magic weapon, I think, might be Anastasia. I don't even know if she's got a magic weapon. She's got her little dart things. But
yeah, I don't know. You make a good point.
It's a weird use of Anastasia. But, you know, sometimes you see that, you know, the old
Feralgeist.
Machine Wraith or Feralgeist, yeah. But it pretty much, I feel like against good players, they're not going to just forget, like, oh, he's got Bogtrog, I forgot, and just run... you know, Denny over to the flag and get charged, but it's just going to stop her.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about forgetting. It's just now the math says you can't do that, even if you're good.
Yeah. Well, and I think Trogs especially, you know, Kossites, you know, their rat is garbage. Everybody knows that, whatever. But Kossites always had the advantage of they could pop up and then shoot you in the ass and their rat's okay. And you know, they could, like, pick out some infantry or whatever. But Trogs can actually... do some real work.
Yeah,
if they can charge off the board edge, and you're kind of guaranteeing it in that scenario. Like they're gonna charge something when you bring them in.
Yeah,
or your opponent's not contesting.
Or you're gonna score a point.
Yeah, right.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can. You know, you don't want to rely on your opponent like forgetting you have ambush or like sort of not taking it into account. But I think you definitely got you some people where they commit softly to the outer flag because you don't commit hard to it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Trogs come in.
Well, anything that is contesting, you almost guarantee yourself a point.
Yeah.
Anything contesting that circle is chargeable.
Yeah.
And if they don't, even if they commit, you know, five or six models.
Yeah.
It's not hard for brutal charging or power. Are they power? They're powerful charging.
Yeah. Well, when they have
CMAs.
Yeah, the CMA is the big deal on that because it makes it way more reliable to remove some stuff. I mean, obviously, if it's a heavy, they're not going to, like, blow a heavy off the table. God, if minions had a way to arc spells, just like, Rask is just like, hey, guys, have Fury.
Yep.
Good Lord. I mean, anything then. They probably just like, oh, that's a death jack. I mean, we killed it.
Yeah.
Assuming they didn't fail.
I don't think it would be that tough to get Fury on them.
Before they charge something?
Yeah.
It's pretty hard. Unless you've like already committed wrath to that side, and then you're sort of telegraphing your whole plan of dominate the outer flag.
Your whole plan of, well, the incursion is always the outside and the middle, so you need to commit to that side anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, there's probably two schools of thought of like where your caster should deploy an incursion. Is it going to be, are you going to put him sort of in the alley between middle and one of the outer flags? You're going to put him lined up with the middle flag, or are you going to gamble and place him?
I don't think you gamble. I think you go towards the middle, but after turn one, you know when it's where it's gone.
Yeah. I don't know.
And nobody said you have to deploy on turn two on your ambush.
Oh, you're talking about, no, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it might just be a good play to leave them off the table until your opponent commits harder. But sometimes you have to sort of force them to. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, either way, for models to be relevant on that outside flag, they are in charge range of Bog Trogs and I believe everyone else that has ambush.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like, it's just them and Kossites, right? I mean,
well, that one Grim tier list gives the
and there's also
Daniel Boone trolls.
Never gonna let me live that down. My I'm a good winner. We'll put it that way. Yeah. It's funny too because I extremely rarely do I rub my opponent's face in anything. But I think it's more like when I know, like when someone's been like giving me grief over something for a while, that's when I'll.
I never gave you grief over anything.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't say I was going to win one time.
Yeah. Tier lists. I mean, I picked Magnus as bad seeds. You could have Sword Knights coming out off the edge.
Yeah.
And Sword Knights threat 9.5 also. So that's pretty cool. They're not necessarily going to explode the world, but, you know.
Yeah. Well,
and you also have an Epic Magnus feat where you're like, cool, I drag all your shit out of the flag and whoop, these dudes run onto it or, you know, what. I mean, there's some really cool plays with ambush on that scenario. And actually going into just talking about SR, I mean, besides incursion and ambushing an incursion, which is seems just really good. I don't know if that was intentional or just sort of an accidental like, oh, yeah, now the flags are within 9 inches of the table edge.
I think they were trying to make it. So huge bases didn't have such a strong presence in between two of those flags when you got the middle and the edge flag. They're only 12 inches apart.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I'm sure that's part of it.
Like, you can at least reach into the contest areas with your fists on your Colossal standing in between.
Yeah.
If not contest, I don't know. I don't think the math works for that.
The double contest? No, they're
Well, yeah, it does.
It's well,
contesting four, and four in between that.
They're 15 inches apart now.
Now they are. I'm talking the previous.
Back in the day, you could double contest.
Yeah,
for sure.
So that's part of why they're widening it.
Yeah, no, it's one. You know, that's one thing. I also think that it was an attempt to, in a weird way, make some of the control casters less powerful and make some of the brick lists better. But you hear wildly mixed opinions on whether that is the case. I still hear that, like, Epic Denny houses the shit out of that scenario. And I think that's, and you know, Epic Haley probably the same way, and Harbinger and stuff like that. I don't, you know, once the target is set, like, you know which two flags are there, you still pop your feet on their fucking army. You know, I don't think that plan has really changed. It's still really bad to go second in that scenario.
Yeah, I agree.
Against those casters. Unless maybe you have ambushers.
Yeah.
You know,
they need to print more ambush stuff.
I agree. Ambush is pretty cool.
I think ambush could be easily a more common tier bonus.
Yeah, I think they got to be really careful with it, though, because there's some units ambushing. Like that unit with the ambushing scouts, or that
tier list. Those guys threaten so far.
Well, that theme list, I feel like,
because they have assault.
The theme list has a lot of garbage in it otherwise. Yeah. Like, it's not a good theme list.
I didn't feel like it was garbage. It's got freaking Highwaymen, we don't even know what those are.
Well, that's true.
They're probably awesome.
They might be. They look like gun mages. They've got like double pistols and shit. Well, we think those are Highwaymen. They were in the spoiled stuff.
Yeah.
From the new Exigence book.
Right.
But,
and it had like lots of thumpers. That all sounds awesome to me. Why does nobody play thumper?
Thumpers are sweet with either Grim. But it was a lot of jank is what I'm saying. Like there's some big components that Grimless want that are not in that theme.
Yeah.
But and I think that might be because they were like, holy shit, ambushing scouts are this good that we have to like make the rest of it kind of crap.
Yeah. And let's sell lots of scouts.
That too, right? And thumper cannons.
I think
bushwhackers
are
there too.
Of thumper
cannons. It's basically just like a hey, did you accidentally buy all this hot garbage off Bartertown? Like, boom, this is your list. Just buy a Grimm 2.
I don't know, and the book. I really like the way they're going with theme lists.
They're
now
so much better than they used. They used to just be like, just, oh, this unit, like, Gareth is a mage hunter. Give him mage hunter things. Yep. The theme list. Oh, God. Yeah,
that
so
Gareth
bad
tier is so bad. They're, when are they going to give me a good Gareth tier? So
they, like,
play
accidentally
him
made a couple good Signar ones in the original book.
Yeah.
Like, completely on accident. And the rest are just, like, hot trash. And the Rhett book is all hot trash, pretty much. I mean, there's a couple that seem effective.
The original ones are all bad.
Yeah. Well,
The remake Viros one is pretty neat.
Yep.
And the remake Ron one is excellent.
Yeah, that's a really good theme list.
Fighters on High.
Yeah, that's a really cool list because they progressively have gotten a little less restrictive and more about like, oh, these models are new, put them in this theme. Yeah. And then like, you know, they're still restrictive and they still create a theme, but it's not like your theme is ninjas, so only ninjas.
Yeah.
Run four units
they
of ninjas.
They allow for diversity in your list instead of like pigeonholing you more into what you already do.
Yeah.
Like some exactly what you said with like the Gareth theme list. Yeah, Gareth theme list is like mage hunter units, period.
Yeah. Well, and
mage
and again,
hunter solos.
Some of those are progressively, those old theme lists are sort of getting updated when like a unit like infiltrator
like,
comes
yeah,
out.
Infiltrator
you're like,
comes
oh,
out,
well, now there's two units you can take.
Yeah, except for like tier two is take three units of mage hunter strike force.
But yeah. That and that's the kind of, that's like a bad theme
also,
list.
You have to attach Solus Escort to all of them.
Jesus. Yep. Anyway, so.
What do you get? A chimera.
You get a 1-point discount
only,
on a chimera.
You're only allowed to take lights in that freaking tier list.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Have a nice chimera and a gorgon.
Ridiculous.
Enjoy.
So I'm looking at, I was kind of thinking, like with ambushers, right? I've been thinking about masters a lot, right?
Yeah.
Because we're gonna go to Adepticon.
Yep.
That's hot off the presses. We're definitely going to Adepticon. And yep. I am playing in all the Masters events because I've yet to go to a con and be like, you know what, fuck this, I'm going to play like like 25 War Machine games. It just never seems to happen. Like last War Machine weekend, I kind of wanted to, but War Machine weekend had some like really weird, like there were just too many people there. Like there was just more people than there probably were, they were accounting for. And it was very difficult. Like I wanted to play a bunch of scramblers and that kind of stuff. I played in the Last Chance Qualifier. But yeah, I just, you know, I didn't want to play Iron Golem because I didn't have my armies fully painted, etc. And I just, it's Jesus. I just didn't get a chance, basically, to play as much as I would have liked. And I'm not blaming that on the event organizers. That was definitely my fault, too. So Adepticon has this, you know, for anybody who hasn't gone to Adepticon, they have a situation where you, like, have to buy event tickets in advance, and you pay per event. So you sort of have a monetary reason to actually play, and you don't bail out on, you know, like, oh, I feel like going to dinner instead. Like, I paid $15 to play in a Masters, I'm going to go play in it.
Right.
So, anyway, Master Scenario Pack, it's got six scenarios. I'm looking at them just trying to figure out, and my faction, I can take Bog Trugs, I guess. I'm probably not going to be taking any Bog Trugs to Masters per se, but I'm looking at this, figuring out, like, well, it's a smaller pool of scenarios, maybe a one out of your three lists with Ambusher, or an Ambusher theme even to your list, can actually be pretty good. Because you've got six scenarios, and it looks like to me, probably at least, I would say half of them are probably Ambusher relevant.
Yeah.
And as soon as my phone actually loads the friggin' PDF. Do you use like an alternate? You don't use the actual.
I use GoodReader.
Oh my God, the Apple one is awful.
Yeah, don't use anything that ever was made by Apple.
Look.
GoodReader, bro.
Yeah, okay, sure. GoodReader app.
I paid $1 for it. It was excellent. Jim Merrill's Accord.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, that's a Jim Merrill drop.
That was a Jim Merrill drop. All right.
Shout out Jim Merrill.
Shout out. So, destruction. I don't know about how relevant ambushers are to destruction so much. Balance of power, kind of the same.
Which one's balance of power?
That's the new one with the, it's got the two diagonal kind of flags. And if you dominate your own, your opponent's
don't worry, you can
points
take them off the board.
So I feel like you could use them
help contest that one, that point that's tough to get to, I guess.
Well, to contest their flag so they're not taking points from you.
Right. Because that flag's pretty deep.
It is kind of
deep. To get to.
It's 15 inches from their back edge, 18 inches in. So if your Trogs come off the edge at about the 4-inch line, they can get to, let's see, that's 414.
They can run 10 inches.
They
like
they
their
could,
actual body being 10 inches.
They could run They could just barely contest, yeah, basically.
One of them could contest it.
One of them could contest by like a millimeter. Yeah, basically. But threaten it at least.
Yeah.
But not a huge deal. Close quarters, same deal, basically. Flags, I think the flags are, they're both 18 inches in. The close quarters flag is much further up. Yeah. I feel like close quarters ends up in a weird, like a yin yang sort of army fight where you're sort of fight diagonally.
I feel like that always
table.
Becomes a non scenario. With two, it becomes a scenario when the game has dwindled down to your caster and two solos against your caster and a heavy.
Yeah, it's the game where you play attrition,
yeah,
because the scenario forces you to,
mm-hmm,
or you know, you play War Machine. It's not like a non scenario in that sense where you don't have to play.
Yeah,
and then as the game grinds down, good players win that scenario on scenario.
Right.
That's how you close out the game with it, but you're not going to, yes, be like.
It doesn't come into a cat and mouse game. It only becomes live once the attrition is like almost to a foregone conclusion. It seems
sort of uniformly the plan with close quarters is to usually flood the opponent's zone, or as much as you know, like threaten the opponent's zone,
yeah,
from your zone. So you're simultaneously contesting your, you know, making sure they can't contest your flag theoretically. Yeah. And try to contest theirs, and you get this diagonal fight thing going. And again, I don't know how good ambushers are in that role, other than because it's sort of a diagonal fight, they might be able
they
to kind
of... They can get in behind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they always can, I guess, but yeah, it creates a little bit of pressure.
There's more of a situation where the models aren't going to be looking north-south on the table necessarily.
Yeah, that's true.
Be looking more at northeast-southwest.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, just for, you know, it's kind of what we're talking about, like, they... Ambushers kind of always bring that pressure. Like, there's always a little bit of that.
Yeah.
You either forget and you get fucked, or you don't forget and they're in your mind. And you're, mm-hmm, like, making decisions based on it that are a lot of times suboptimal. You're, like, spreading units out in weird ways, or, like, turning reach guys to face the table edge. Like, it's just weird stuff happens when you're trying to kind of account for them.
Mm-hmm.
Incursion is scenario four. Obviously, that's one we just talked about.
Yep.
And it's very relevant in Incursion, most relevant, arguably. Scenario 5 is a blank white page on my phone. Here, it's out.
It's snowblind.
Yeah, it's snowblind. Yeah, it's out flank, and that's another one that's very relevant for them, man. It's mosh boobs.
Mosh boobs.
Yeah, as the Texans call it. Or is it mosh balls? No, mosh balls, I think they're different heights. Because, you know, balls.
Your balls aren't perfectly symmetric?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate for your fiance.
I don't think she complains either way about the ball symmetry.
Oh.
They hang out of the bottom of my boxer shorts. That's when the complaints start. Got a few years yet.
It's gross.
Grab the balls.
Wear boxer shorts?
No. But when I'm 60, I will.
A modern man does not wear boxer shorts.
I will
shorts.
Have one ball hanging out.
Wear some nice boxer briefs. Be a fucking gentleman, for God's sakes.
Of course I wear boxer briefs like everybody else. Do they even sell?
Thank God I was wearing them at work the other day.
Do they even sell like 1990s
boxer
shorts
anymore?
When I just like
cartoonishly split my fucking pants.
Cartoonishly. That's a really good...
Crawling around under my fucking somebody's desk and just rip the crotch of my pants open.
I like that.
It was awful.
I mean, I don't like that.
Thankfully, I wasn't wearing like flamboyantly colored pink ones or something.
Yeah, you weren't wearing like Spider-Man boxers.
No, I was just wearing some nice, same color as my pants.
You know,
boxer briefs.
When I was like in my early 20s, man, I had a ton of girls really enjoyed that I would wear like superhero boxers and shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you like, banging like 13-year-olds?
No. No,
you
this
sure?
isn't. This isn't like weird podcast confession time where I like come out as a person who should be in prison. No, man, just like. I don't know why. Like,
oh man, Spider-Man, you're so sexy.
It's not anything about that. It's just you've given somebody an excuse to talk about your fucking underwear. Right? You're in
well,
a situation
then,
Brian, where
it wasn't about the underwear, yeah, was it?
Yeah, duh. What I'm saying is it's like a great icebreaker for a girl to talk about your fucking underwear, and a lot of girls like don't know how to break that ice.
All right, dudes, here you have it from fucking Fohawk Fleshbeard Brian. You definitely need if you want to get laid, you need to wear superhero boxer shorts.
Dude,
you heard it here first.
I shit you not. My mom would buy them for me as a joke.
There's going to be a run on that one rack at Meijer.
And I would.
Yeah, is Meijer a national company?
No, they're a Michigan Midwest thing.
On that rack at Walmart.
Meijer is like super Walmart for people with souls, I guess.
From
I
Michigan?
Don't know. Yeah, basically. It's not. It's almost identical store. It just doesn't have that like empty
slave
hollow
labor.
Yeah.
Background story?
Yeah. Like, you can't... What's the Bill Burr joke where you like you pick up the sneaker and you like listen to it like a conch shell and you can hear the children crying in it? You don't get that vibe as much in that store as you do as in like Walmart or something. But so anyway, balls and boxer shorts and superhero pants aside, outflank obviously super relevant and any of them the just to go contest. What are they? They're 14 inches in and they're six so. 8 inches, so a four inch walk off of your deployment line, quote unquote. Your ambush line, which is like your back edge of your base at the 3 inch.
Yep.
Basically, a 4 inch walk puts you in the circle, and obviously they're all speed 5 or 6. Yeah. Right? Cossites are speed 6, I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah, whatever. Even if they're speed 5, same deal, basically.
Doesn't matter. They're charging at least 8.5.
Super easy contest, and then obviously a bunch of shots or a bunch of melee attacks to try to clear the zone. And that's a scenario where, like, maybe you do have Rask on that side, and he gets to Fury them or something. I don't know. I still think it's pretty difficult to get Fury on them before they get to do work off the line. But
I think on Incursion, it's possible, especially if you wait till turn 3 to do it.
Here's a weird question that you would know because you're a Gator player, and I don't because, you know, minions and mercs. Do they have a spell extender, like Bone Grinder type thing at all? Do they have that on some cards?
There's a tier list in Gators that can take it.
Take Bone Grinders.
That's
it. Okay.
I think Caliban. One of the two voodoo dudes that nobody plays. Yeah, it's Caliban.
Caliban, yeah. Well, Bloody Barnabas people play, or, you know, used to play a lot
more,
I guess.
Yeah.
You don't hear about him as much now, but he's still very relevant, I think, compared to Caliban, who's nobody plays, unfortunately.
Right.
He's cool, too. Like,
yeah,
well-played Caliban can actually really house. Like,
he's got Parasite, which is...
just killing shit,
like,
flinging
around
a Parasite.
It's like the same as Fury, right? Not quite.
Kind of. The cycling Parasite during
his little feet turn thing, you can cycle it pretty cool.
You did that to me once really effectively, where you moved Parasite, I think, like 3 times on that turn or something.
You're
something
welcome,
ridiculous.
Ladies.
Yeah, wow.
Get some Caliban boxers.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
He's a hero. Yeah.
The best are the Superman.
The ones with just the big S.
Yeah, like right on your fucking crotch.
Your dong comes out of the S.
Well, I mean, yeah, eventually. Yeah, take your time.
When you're hopping around.
Yeah. Imagine
everybody knows the buttons for show.
Right, like your button and your zipper are essentially like a telephone booth. So
and Clark Kent just pops out.
Yep.
With a cape on your dong.
Cape on your dong.
Just get some clown makeup on your bag.
Now we're talking.
Make it red.
You made this weird. I was just trying to give
it's weird now.
I was trying to give some advice.
Girls that were into superhero underwear.
Dude, I'm telling you, I don't understand. I could not. It was a phenomenon I never planned. It just happened.
The better question is, if you had any inkling you were going to get laid, why the fuck were you wearing superhero underwear?
That's what I'm saying. Like, women or girls or whatever, they seem to they respond well to that sort of panache where you're just like, fuck it, I'm wearing superhero undies, and you're not even going to see them until it's, like, happening. And then they're like, they laugh, and they're like, that's fucking awesome.
See, I feel like, don't chicks ever just bail when they see something like that?
Never.
Just like, oh, it's happening. It's happening. No. Doesn't matter what you do once they're locked in your room in your, like, sex dungeon, Bri. What the fuck?
Sorry, ladies, the cuffs are on.
I'm just
saying. Check out these underwears.
It's the kind of, like, crazy art school chick I used to, you know, go after was really into the idea that I was like, I would be just like wearing nice regular clothes on a date and then just fucking superhero boxers on underneath that. I don't know how to explain it other than that. It's just,
I just feel like there should be deal breakers. Aren't there deal breakers for you?
Like for clothing?
Yeah, I don't know. There's gotta be something a girl could do at the point that things are about to go down where you're just like, never mind, I'm out.
Well, here's a deal breaker. You're not my fiance. Deal breaker.
I'm talking about go back in time. I thought we were going back in time and talking about superhero undies.
Yeah, we are. We're talking about like early 20s. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Like she's got a hairy back or something. You're out, right?
Yeah. Well, that's different than you're wearing.
I feel like it's not that much different.
All right. Well, I had 100% success ratio. So why don't you just listen to me and stop arguing? Stop arguing the theory. I've lived it.
I guess.
Facts.
I guess.
So fire support. Flags are 16 inches in. So that seems relevant. And then their objective is hidden sort of behind it on their side. whatever, 4 inches back, something like that. 19 to midline is 5 inches back, centered. So maybe they get an objective. Not the turn they come off the table edge. It's too far, but they certainly threaten it. Like, you know, from, you know, you can deploy in kind of angling.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that's not unique to 2014.
No. I think what's super unique about the current SR is that incursion is...
It's incursion mostly.
And people play a ton of incursion. That's like we don't know what to play.
It's the easiest one to set up. Yeah. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. But fire support is sort of incursion. I mean, it's very incursion-y. It's got two flags on the midline that you have to sort of deal with. You just have these weird objectives. And sometimes those objectives can be really hard to get to if you play a melee force. So maybe minions would have some really good luck with getting just a big cloud of bog trugs behind that, eventually getting into it. And just to contest it too. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, I think it's really important to, in that scenario.
That scenario's got the built-in contest with your...
I'm talking about the enemy flag.
Gotcha.
You're coming in on. Yeah, you're not coming in on your own.
Yeah.
Unless things have gone like super tits up. I don't think so.
Super tits up.
Yeah, not just tits up, but super
mosh pits up.
Super mosh pits up.
Superhero mosh pits up.
Yep.
Did you ever run any chicks that had superhero underwear on?
No.
What if you had like Superman versus Batman? Like she had Batman undies?
Yeah.
And you had your trusty old faithful Superman undies on?
I would probably make a joke about lighting the bat signal.
Yeah?
Yeah. No.
Did you ever have any like superhero condoms?
Turn on the Ace of Base and get it on. I couldn't even get that joke out. It started cracking up before I even said Ace of Base. All right, so last thing, and this is
you know what the result of this is going to be? I'm going to be playing a game next week at the store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look at the table that's beyond my opponent,
mm-hmm.
and Jarek is going to be bent over it, poking out of his khakis, superhero undies.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he's going to be like, Brian endorsed it, man.
I'm basically War Daddy, and all I do is give advice to like the 20-something-year-olds that we play. You know, we routinely play.
You know, I bet has superhero underwear, Dryer.
Yeah.
I would almost guarantee it.
I bet Jarek and Dreyer both wear superhero underwear.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I respect that. So, last topic, I guess. And this is a meaty one. So, you know, like I said earlier in the episode, we want to talk a little bit about... I guess we'll kind of discuss the train of thought we have when we sit down at lunch and pull out our phones and talk, you know, pull out our worms and talk about lists. And not just, hey, this is a cool list I made, but as far as tuning pairings for tournament play.
I think our approaches are a little bit different, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're actually a lot different. One thing I don't do that I think a lot of players do is a lot of players get like a list that's like the list they want to play.
That's what I was going to say. I think I'm more focused on playing. I want to play this list, and then when I need to, play this list.
Yeah, I try to not. I think maybe I'm delusional, but I want to be like and have equal mastery of both lists. That's my goal. It's probably not necessarily realistic.
I don't think that those two things are mutually exclusive. Like you can still have both your lists mastered, but going in with the mindset of I'm always going to play this list until I'm forced to not play this list.
Yeah.
Keeps you out of some of the list chicken situations where you're like, oh, well, I prepared to play against this list with this one and this list with this one,
yep.
you know, with your A and B, and then you sit there and try and figure out which one they're going to play, whereas I'm more probably going in with if I see this faction, this faction, it's my off list.
Yeah.
And the other nine factions or whatever it is, I'm probably playing my main list.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately it kind of ends up being the same thing, but my fear is that I play a list that I'm like really comfortable with, and then I hit with that matchup where I'm like, I'm not comfortable with that matchup. It's bad for my favorite list. Well, and now I'm playing this other list that I'm not as good with, and I'm playing a matchup that I am used to kind of kicking my ass, right? That's my concern.
I can see feeling that way.
I'm unfamiliar, and mentally I'm going in like, oh, this is bad, so I'm bringing this other thing.
I think what I'm trying to say is I won't go in with the mindset that I'm bad with this list because it's not the chosen primary list for this event. Yeah. I think it's more I'm going in with this is the list I want to play.
Yeah.
Because it sort of takes the stress of list chicken away.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm not playing List Chicken. I'm playing this until I see a stop sign that says, don't play this.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a balance there, I guess. Because my fear is that I'm like, you know, I really like Chromac, right? I'm like, all right, I'm going to play Chromac all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going to be like Chromac master. I'm going to figure out like, you know, what it's good against, what it's not good against, mm-hmm. you know, what my particular list does that maybe the net list doesn't do, because it's a little different. I mean, not drastically, really, but, you know, stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so, like, Chromac fluent that I'm just like, oh, yeah, I can play this against almost anything.
Yeah.
And then I hit that matchup where I'm like, ugh, Chromac bad. Like,
yeah.
Yep, it's Epic Haley or, you know, Epic Hane, and they're just, all my beasts are going to get shot off table, and I can't do anything about it, you know, or whatever. So I got this other list.
Yeah.
So now I'm comboing into a list that I'm not as comfortable with playing because I don't rep it as much because I don't play, you know, I play Chromac more because that's my guy. That's mm-hmm. like I feel like if you're picking the list you play more, then you're creating a negative situation sort of compounded. And what I would like to think is I can just be like, I want to win List Chicken with my two lists, right?
Yeah, I just feel like there's so many list chickens that become coin flips of who got the right list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think part of winning that list chicken, because, I mean, it exists, right? Like, you can't pretend mm-hmm. it doesn't exist. And,
right.
and not that you are, but there are players who just sort of, like, don't want to believe.
Yeah. Like, there's people that play list chicken defensively and people that play it offensively.
Right, right.
You and can I take think, your dream list and hope you're going to get the super good matchup,
yeah.
or you can try and mitigate your losses and take the one that's the yep. the least terrible in the situation.
And you can play a faction or play a list style that maybe forces your opponent immediately to have to play defensive list chicken. Like you're like, well, you know, I've got this list that shuts down X thing
yeah.
badly. Like if you're playing like Ron Assyria and you see me with Chromac Baldur 1,
mm-hmm.
are you going to drop Ron? That's the question. And that's, that is what, right. But you can,
no.
because you can just,
I guess we can go super Jedi mind trick and can, but
well, yeah,
it's just such an auto loss against Chromac that it's really, that's like the super ballsiest move you can make.
Right. But I might just assume, well, there's no way he'd play Chromac.
Or no, or way, no way Ron because you have Chromac.
So I'll play Baldur because
that only works if your Baldur list is better against my other list.
Yeah, which it would be. Because Baldur is maybe. Way better against shooting than Chromac. Like Chromac can Assyria basically is true sight and you know but like just basically explain my train of thought, right? Like Assyria could probably shoot my beasts off the table or do a ton of damage, kill all my shrimps, all that shit. Yeah. Right.
I'm glad we didn't want to talk about your Michigan Cup list. Let's talk about mine instead.
I'm just saying, I threw out two casters. You didn't have to confirm them. So now I'm going to pick Baldur. Like, so the game theory says it's going to be Assyria Baldur.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both of our perceived weak lists get put away.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody throws a loop there, then you got to play that bad matchup. And that's something where it's like, now we're playing that bad matchup, and it's a list I'm not as good with because I don't play it as often. Now I'm really fucked. And that I don't want to be in that spot. So
yeah,
I get what you're saying.
That's fine. I think that the other aspect of the attitude that you're using versus the attitude I'm using is you're trying to go in with a split of two lists that I would expect more often are sort of skews
mm-hmm.
one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my... what's the right word? The way I'm looking at it is an all-comer list and then a list that covers its specific weaknesses
yeah.
that are going to be fewer
yeah.
because the list was designed to be an all-comers. Whereas if you're bringing two lists that are sort of split and you're meant to play it evenly, it's going to be this one's a good against 50% of my matchups, the other one's good against the other 50.
Mm-hmm. I think...
Which further pushes you to list chicken.
Yeah, and I think what you have to do if you're trying to take the mindset I'm taking, which is to sort of have list equality in your mind where you're like, I'm good with both of these.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be in a position where you can be like, in a bad matchup, I can play out of it with both of these because I'm fluent with both. And they're not that hard skewed that they don't work against certain things, like at all. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I feel like some of that's faction driven. Like Menoth players do that all the time. They're just like, I got two pretty good lists. They're like, oh, whoops.
Yeah.
I juked when I should have jinked tonight. I dropped Harby against Signar. Somehow that happened, right?
Yeah. Like, or whoops. You got locked into it or something.
Yeah, right. I fucked up. Well, you know, it's still Harby.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just don't get her, try not to get her shot in the face and you still got a game, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that sometimes it's a faction that does that and sometimes it's the play style and sometimes it's, you know, like you hear like in the European meta, you know, they play a lot of like Masters events and stuff too, like big Masters events.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, if you're playing List Chicken like seven rounds in a row, like you might fuck up really bad and lose a game that you could have maybe won if your lists were more balanced. And you hear a lot more about players playing at least maybe two of their three are pretty balanced lists and then like they got a skew in there or something like that.
Yeah, at Masters it's a little bit different when you've got three lists.
Three lists is a totally different ballgame. Yeah. And we're not,
when we're talking about we're Michigan talking Cup style with a pair.
Yep. Yeah, SR, you know, typical two list SR 50-point, you know, what everybody plays type tournaments.
Yeah. It seems like if you get your matchups the way you want them to be, like if you get to essentially pick your matchups, it's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you also run the risk of running into a bad matchup more often than having your 80% all-comer list and the 20% exception list.
Yeah.
Like in a 5-round or 6-round tournament, which is what this is going to be, I'm expecting to play, you know, the main list 4 or 5 times and the off list once.
It's essentially a rock, scissors, paper game inside of another rock, scissors, paper game, right? Because if you bring a, this is going to be too hard for me to describe, but I'm going to take a shot at it. You bring a all-comers list that you want to play 80% of the time, and then let's say your 20% list is a big-time armor cracker. Like, armor skew just doesn't work for your main list. Like, really bad armor skew. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Runes of War, Xerxes, Brick, whatever, that kind of shit. The problem is your opponent is playing the more linear, like, real list, chickeny list. He's got one list that's, like, super infantry-heavy, and then one list that's super arm-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're putting that conundrum where you're like, fuck. Like, you're still playing List Chicken within List Chicken. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what makes – I mean, that's one of the things that the sort of game within a game of picking lists is just so intriguing. And I think a lot of players overthink it. And I look at – you know, I watch, like, Chuck and Jake and those dudes practice. They practice bad matchups all the time because it just happens all the time. It's just like you can live in an awesome theory machine delusion land where that never happens.
I agree that that's the way to do it.
100%, yeah. You got to play Ron versus Cromack and see if you can play out of it. You know what I mean?
I have played out of it.
Yeah. I mean, you're not playing the Ron, you know, the Ron tier list is going to have the old school theme list with like 50 mittens is literally going to do
charge
nothing.
The battle mages? No, that's, yeah.
Well, that's
what unwinnable.
Because you're literally charging with battle mages.
It's like 4 units of battle mages.
Yeah, they're running across the table, beatbacking motherfuckers, Met 6, Pal 11s.
I don't think I've ever done that, ever.
They're actually not a terrible melee unit. I mean, you know, are they going to punch war, you know, war
poles?
Yeah, Met
6, Pal 11's not terrible.
Yeah.
Speed 6, no reach. Yeah, you're right.
Beatback? Come on, man.
Yeah, beatback. So they can get deeper and crush more shit with their POW 11 power glove.
Yeah, they could kill two mans.
They could
theoretically
superly kill two mans.
Look, Stormblade's the limit of fear of those guys.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Stormblade's like, oh shit, Battle Mage just charged us. We're all dead now.
Yeah.
Because we're 12-15.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it. So anyway, I mean, that's some theory, I guess. I don't know, you know, that it sounded I'm trying to describe the idea of that layering of rock, scissors, papering, but I think there's a sort of a mental place you have to be where, and this is my point, I guess, about my two list being fluent, is I don't ever want to be like, oh fuck, I lost List Chicken, I lost, before the game starts.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be like, ooh, that's a little rough, but I still want to have the confidence where I can be like, I'm going to fucking try to play through it. I'm not going to come in thinking I'm
That's fair. And I guess what I'm getting at is when I have that 80% all-comer, I don't feel like I can lose List Chicken with that list.
Yeah, like you feel like even if you hit its bad matchups, you're so good with it that you're
well,
good.
No, not even that. It's more that the list is built to not have so many bad matchups. Sure. But those very few bad matchups are strongly covered by the others.
Yeah.
The other list.
That's fair. Yeah, I get it.
So I feel in the same way. I can't get that bad matchup at all.
Yeah. You want lists that enable confidence.
Yeah. I refuse to subscribe, and maybe this is foolishly, but to the idea of that off list, I can't be good with it too. just by putting in time with it.
Right. So I think we're kind of saying the same thing in different ways. I just think you want to play one list more often than the other, where I'm a little more ambivalent to that idea. I guess I just want to play, like, I think I want to just drop the right list, which
right.
Maybe, like I said, is not as realistic as your plan.
I'm just trying to take the stress out of worrying about mm-hmm. list chicken.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, taking the list chicken out of the game entirely is, like I said, I hate bringing up Menoth again, but, like, it must be fucking nice to just be like,
Yeah.
It's just, I got two lists. They're both pretty sweet. And, I guess I don't want to run into this one thing, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
But not a big deal. So, maybe that a lot of it has to do with attitude, too. I think you can overthink that a tremendous amount. I've seen players, like, sort of, you know, juke themselves into oblivion and just worry themselves about it. But, you know, they're definitely high-end players who advantage themselves tremendously by playing list chicken better than you know, or better than their opponent.
Yeah.
So I guess to talk about just some lists or some ideas, you know, I look at like Circle has this in abundance, where that you have a caster style that just houses like a thing very specifically well. And then
give like an example of that,
like Kruger one
crushes infantry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then you have two options with your list build at that point, and then going into pairings, you can skew the list 100% just murder infantry. Well, like you could build a Kruger list that could like table like Kricks on like turn three type shit.
Right.
I mean, you literally like you're like Kruger, and then you got Wold Shrimp under deflection, and uh-huh. you got, you know, I mean, you've got like this just plethora of range attacks, a couple things to hold zones, and then you're just fucking punishing them. You got your uh-huh. feet, and you got. You know, you got a couple geomancers in that list. You know, you got like double Wold Warden or something ridiculous.
Right.
You know, a weird list that you like wouldn't really drop against other stuff. And you've made this awesome anti-infantry skew that's probably not good against anything else. Or you go the other route, which is Kruger handles infantry. Let's throw some heavies in there.
And you make the list do the rest.
Right. You have
to build a more balanced list.
Right. Right.
And that only works, I think, with some, like the way you're describing it, with, not every caster has that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no.
Not every caster just mops up infantry.
No, exactly. But Circle has that, right? So you have.
Like when P-Striker shoots all that infantry.
God damn it. yeah, anybody who doesn't know, there's this bit where Bill can't keep Striker and Kane straight. Except now he can, but he still trolls me with it by saying shit like that. Son of a bitch. My eyeball twitches every time you do it. Right, so you look at, like, other casters in Circle, for example. Like, you've got Kruger, too, and he's just, like, shooting. No, just turn that off.
Yeah.
You just don't get to shoot. You know, pretty much. I mean,
mm-hmm.
generalization. Chromac, spells just don't work, right?
Yeah.
Kruger 1, high-def infantry doesn't work. Just that play just doesn't, it literally just turns that play style off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have these casters that have like built-in skews, and then you can either further skew them in whatever way. You know, you could build a Kruger 2 list that's got the fucking, you know, Wold Guardians and shit like that, that like super yep. shooting resistant stuff, and make this just, if you run a shooting list, you just lose. Like a Father Lecomte style list, where it's yep. just like, if you drop a gun line, you just lost.
Yeah.
Or you can take the rest of the list to cover the rest of your stuff. And now you're building like sort of that, like what we're talking about, like a list pairing balance, except you're building it in one list. You know,
right.
You can build balance out of that, or you can build skew out of that. And
yeah, that sort of plays more to the play style of the 80-20.
Yeah.
Whereas what you right. described first, like I'm going to make this guy mop up infantry and the rest of the list mop up infantry too,
yeah.
goes more to that 50-50 pairing.
Yeah, and more pure list chicken.
Yeah.
Especially if you hit another guy doing a similar thing.
Yeah.
Like, you hit the guy who's like, I've got Karchev and a shitload of jacks, or I've got, you know, Irisk 1 with infinity high-def dudes. Yeah. And then you're like, Kruger, like
which one of us is going to pick the right matchup?
Right. So that's something I've noticed about Circle, is there's some of the casters can really dictate that. You know, and then... you know, you've got the Epic Morvanas that are sort of a little more balanced and handle a lot of shit pretty well. And that's sort of, you can just sort of skew Epic Morvana towards kind of whatever. You can build mm-hmm. her anti-armor or anti-infantry or just sort of around her. And I think if you're going to play Epic Morvana, she becomes your 80% list probably.
Yeah.
She's kind of got that Epic Lich sort of feel where it's just yeah. like,
Well, she's just good.
There's just not a ton of bad matches.
And she builds a good all-around list because she doesn't have a ton of weaknesses.
No, not really. She doesn't like getting shot in the face, but, you know, it's circle. There's plenty of ways to...
All right, so let me give you a different perspective on how to pair lists. And this is something that I use when I'm first introducing somebody to the game and the idea of a two-list format.
Mm-hmm.
And I often, you know, very often in our store is a super magic-heavy store. So a lot of the guys that ask for a demo know how to play Magic, and I use it like I equate it to a sideboard.
Mm-hmm.
But I try and give them different ways to look at pairings, and I think as I've matured, this has become a little less valid. It's not so cut and dry, but I give them ideas of dichotomy in lists. Like, this list is for infantry, this one's for battle group spam.
Mm-hmm.
This list is for high defense, this list is for high armor. This list is for hordes, this list is for war machine. And there are some lists that you build that will just crush war machine. Like, Kalissa, you build that list to crush war machine, you can do that.
Yeah, it's kind of an idea that a lot of, like, I think new players are immediately like, I'm going to build an anti-hordes and an anti-war machine list. And not really the way to do it, but with Kalissa specifically, yes. Like,
I agree with you.
Specifically,
however,
war machine.
I think that still holds true in my heart as an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanics that kill warlocks super bone me up.
Yeah.
And the idea of having something like that in a list, like this list just has three models with grievous wounds. It's like, all right, I'm going to kill your fucking caster. And that's just the way it's going to be. I don't, like I said, as I've matured as a player, I don't think that stuff is as that particular dichotomy is as valid as the other ones.
Yeah.
But it's there in my heart. Well, I want to play Gareth and double Banshee.
I think Rhett in particular can do that with lists more. They can be like, this is a Hordes list. This is a War Machine list because they have
Kalissa and they have access to Grievous Wounds.
Like offensive tool and Eris 3 now as well.
Eris 3 is also awesome.
Offensive tools that can basically what is the spell? Backlash.
Yeah.
That applied properly just wins games.
Backlash and Mage Hunter Strike Force, man.
Yeah, or you know, whatever. I mean, just backlash plus some attacks. You know what I mean? Just backlash plus she shoots her gun three times plus this other garbage, and all of a sudden their caster's at like three hit points. And even if you didn't kill them, they're
ghost snipers. There's a lot of stuff that automatically puts damage on.
Yeah, and they're playing in the backfield forever at that point, or dead. But other factions, I don't believe skew as hard to the Hordes War Machine as much as it's more to the battle group heavy or battle group light
infantry heavy.
Yeah, and by infantry, usually you're referring to single wound infantry.
Yes.
And maybe even where an additional nuance that comes in is like you see stuff like a lot of lists with Kator now, like Iron Fang Pikemen are like very in vogue right now because it's a ton of dudes that can be buffed to hit like fucking trucks. I mean, they hit pretty hard out of the box, but they're not invincible to the typical like Powten chain lightning, you know, Signar bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, P. Kruger type stuff, right?
So that becomes more the, is this a defense or armor skew?
Yeah, but that's an arm skew, right? Yeah. That typically, the way to remove arm skew, you're like, oh, I have heavies that I'll threat your heavies. I win. Yeah. Well, now you're trying to put heavies into units of IFP. Mm-hmm. You kill three or four IFP, and then the unit murders you.
Yeah.
Right? So you got a weird spot there. So like,
yeah, well, you start to get a diagram where nothing is either one or the other of those things I listed.
Yeah.
It's which side of each of these three things does it come on to?
Is it
a War Machine list? Is it a Hordes list? Is it high defense? Is it high armor?
I think when you can build a list that kind of doesn't fit fully in one of those categories, or even find units like Temple Flame Guard, Shield Wall sometimes does that, right? But there's also units that really fuck Shield Wall. So it doesn't become this, like you said, it's not an A-B thing. It really is. There are multiple like things that counter and don't counter.
Yeah, there's at least two or three facets to every army.
Yeah, right. And so ultimately, you can literally sit here and just think yourself into like fucking oblivion about this.
Mm-hmm.
But bottom line is like even your off list or your other SKU list should have some answers. Whether it's just caster based infantry removal or like, you know, I'm playing a caster that has Curse of Shadows or like Parasite,
mm-hmm.
but is the list itself doesn't hit that hard. Well, I've got this. I've got an answer for armor at least.
Yeah,
you know that I can apply and then use. You know, tactics and guile to try to work my way out of that bad.
Exactly. I think that what you want to do is. I think that's. We just did a commercial for those more balanced lists.
Yeah.
Because you can't play a skew for every situation you can run into.
Yeah. And for the record, I don't play skew.
I'm not trying to pigeonhole you into that.
No. I'm just saying, for, you know, because that's something that I. Well, I think what I'm talking about the style of list pairing I want to play. I think it making it sound skewed, but my lists typically. When I say like one skews towards this, one skews towards that, but on the graph they're like, you know, they're not to the far ends of the spectrum. They're sort of this one's on this side, this one's on that side to some extent. But that's when I recently have faction swapped from Signar to Circle, you know, just for this year or however long I'm going to play Circle for a while.
Mm-hmm.
One of the joys of it is I'm like, I can crack armor. Yep. And like any list, I just bring some sweet heavies and they kill shit. Cool. Or I bring blood trackers and they fuck everything up. Or, you know what? There's a problem that I always had playing Signar where I had to build in Signar. I was always playing this awful skew list chicken where I was like, this list just murders all the infantry because that's what Signar does. This other list has all of the armor removing tools in it.
Yeah.
And if I fuck up and drop like Pecane versus Runes of War, I just lost probably.
Yeah.
Right. Not being in that boat anymore is really nice. I'm not saying Signar is a bad faction or Signar does that for everybody, but the list I was running kind of did that.
Yeah.
And I've sort of learned my lesson, and it's nice to play a Hordes faction that actually has some very good infantry that remove infantry, counter infantry, I guess, if you will, but also does what Hordes does well, which is has sweet beasts that kill stuff.
Yeah.
And beasts that kill infantry. I mean, like, look at the Warpwolf Stalker. That dude's like the perfect balance piece. Yeah.
Warpwolf Stalker is like the new star of my nightmares. There's like three guys playing Circle at the store now, and just Warpwolf Stalker runs rampant in my dreams.
Yeah, and then you charge
murdering my infantry machine retribution list that are full of freaking riflemen now because of the Thane.
You Assyria feat and charge it with three halberdiers and it dies, and then you're like, oh, I guess it's not that bad a dream after all. My three fucking halberdiers killed it.
If you let me do that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can't stop it. A 15-inch charge threat seems all right.
It's okay.
But, so I talked a little bit about Circle, and we did mention Rhett and how they sort of handle this stuff differently. Rhett's a little more striated. Like, Rhett has, like, a lot of rules that are, like, warjacks, you know, warcasters, ignores the overcharge, what do they call that, power field.
Yep.
So you want to talk a little bit about what, like, the direction you've started, not necessarily like break down your list, but sort of what you think fits your 80%er and then what your cover is?
Well, I mean, my 80%er, yeah, whatever. I'm playing Ron is the idea because I have a ton of comfort with the guy. Played a lot of tournaments with Ron, and that Fires on High list has been like a security blanket for me.
Yeah, that list is really good. And you have a ton of reps with it, which is sweet.
Right.
That's really
important. So I feel good about that just being my go-to list.
So instant confidence.
Instant confidence, exactly. Yeah. And I don't think I'm not like a rattle person when it comes to tournaments. I don't think I play a lot different. I don't tighten up because I'm at a tournament versus game night. It doesn't really faze me.
100% opposite of me, who I'm like in. I'm like wound as a guitar string at the beginning of a tournament. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, I don't feel that way. But I think that's a subject for another day.
But yeah, no, that's a whole podcast worth of chat.
So I feel very good about Ron. So what I did is I sat down with all my buddies and I'm like, what's my bad matchups for Ron? And there's a few obvious ones.
Yeah.
You know, things that stop magic from happening are pretty bad for Ron. Sure, so your Chromac, Druids, Book, things that deny those little mittens and their little power gloves. Things that say can't be knocked down.
Yeah.
Things that can't be pulled around.
Or Midwinters and Harlan Versus of the world, too.
Right.
A little bit. I mean, not as bad as those other ones, but still.
Right.
those things.
I feel like it's a small subset of the game that's a super bad matchup for him. Yeah. Everything else, I feel like he has a game against.
And you named two factions pieces there that immediately come to mind, which is Menoth and Circle.
Menoth and Circle, exactly. Those are two problems for sure. And I think that I would also be happy to lump in Infantry Spam Krix. Probably falls into trouble for him too. At least it could be better, and luckily I think that my cover for it is pretty strong against Krix as well.
Yeah, I think you're like when you talk about Ron, or that list, the Fires on High, even though it's got a Colossal in it, I mean Polarity Shield and Ron, and I mean Ron can just like chain blast or feat to chain blast. I mean there's actually a lot of infantry removal on that list, so I don't think it's awesome against Krix.
No, it can be better.
But it is not. I think it is deceptively good, or deceptively on the okay side against a lot of Krix lists, which is interesting because you're like, you know,
I think it's more that what's going to counter those other two factions, the Circle and Menoth stuff, also happens to be good against Krix.
Okay,
but I think that the nice new Assyria is an excellent toolbox, and I think we mentioned in the last podcast, and if not, everyone else has. You can build her list so many different ways. It's like, if you've got a problem, there's a way to solve it with a Assyria list.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
She supports her army so well that it whatever models you put with her are just going to excel at what they already did.
Yeah.
So you just pick and choose what you want to play with her, and it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like she's one of those casters where if you try to build to everything on her card, you can't get it.
You can't get to play 100 points.
Yeah. And additionally, you're probably diluting the power of some of the other spells. Like Crusader's Call is bonkers. It's so good.
Yeah.
So if you only take like one melee unit and you're still casting Crusader's Call, it doesn't feel like you're getting nearly the value out of that as you would if you had two melee units and two Mage Hunter assassins or, you know, something like that. Or, you know, so one of the other ridiculous solos that kills everything, right? So, but I think you're 100% right about that. Like, if you have a list that you like, but you know it's got some bad matchups, and then you have this other caster that has just this like sort of multifaceted play style. You know, you look at like a Veil 2, like just this fucking awesome all rounder kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people play Veil 2 as like the primary because it's such a it's an awesome all rounder.
She's a good 80%er.
Yeah. But there are a lot of casters out there that have that kind of ability to like play some different styles, and it's just how you build the list really, and then you just cover with it. So
but
I think you're
conversely, there's a lot of casters that make you play a list a certain way. Like Ron is kind of one of those casters. You need to be taking some mittens with him, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen lists with Ron where there's like a unit of mittens and a couple of the solos, and that's like enough. And then they're relying on like, you know, arc nodes and then a bunch of solos, and it's like almost a pure assassination list where they're just, you know, I've seen that style. I've seen lots of mittens. I've seen him enabling, you know, like you can run Ron with like Nis Hunters and Polarity Field them and cast Force Field, and now you have like basically like unkillable fucking Nis Hunters or Mage Hunter Strike Force, same way, right? Like can't be charged, can't be shot, can't be AoE, and you're like, oh, that's, you know, that's an interesting play style, and you could play like this attrition Ron style, which I think I want to say, and I actually have only seen him play it like once, but Danny Modesto kind of plays Ron like that. Like he's not, it's a very infantry heavy, like there's like 30 or 40 dudes on the table, plus an Arc Node or two. You know, it's like Nis Hunters and Invictors and Halbs, maybe, I think is the last list I saw his, but I'd have to ask him about it. But that's a perfectly valid style for that dude. But I agree, you gotta take magic attacks. I mean, you don't want to just cross your feet off. You know?
Yeah, I agree. And or something like Ossian. You can't take Ossian and then take two melee units. You just can't.
No. Ossian, I think, is the most rigid wisp build probably in red. Yeah. Maybe Raven too.
Yeah, Raven's the same way.
Yeah,
it's just those are good 80% lists. They're not good covers, and I think that Assyria is one of the she's the best cover that I can think of right now. The best support caster that really is super selfless and just makes anything you put under her shine.
Yeah, so you're just like, well, what covers my main list? What kind of units cover it? You know, like, you know, if I'm playing, you know, if Circle's a bad matchup, what do I want? Do I want to ignore stealth and shoot them off the table? Do I want to have crazy long threat range with high mat infantry and kill them that way?
Right.
And then you sort of go to Menoth the same way. Like, well,
yeah, well, let me take you through the second part of that quest to find the cover.
Yeah.
Where I talked about what the bad matchups were. Mm-hmm. Then I talked to my bros that play those factions and said, sit down and build. Here's the caster I want to play. Build the most terrifying list that you can to play against you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all bros at the store. We're trying to help each other.
Yeah.
It's a fun, you know, just tell me what's core. Terrible. What do you hate seeing across the table from you in this faction?
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at that composite and it's, you know, 70, it's, if I take everything they say, it's 75 points or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you cut out what you can cut out and try and get the most out of what those people are pointing you to.
Yeah.
And there you have it with her.
Right. So, have you gotten that all that data back yet from?
I know I've gotten a lot of it. I had you do it for Circle. I had Gabe do it for Circle.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to Jarek about it yet. I feel very strong about the cover for Circle, and I think that some of the stuff that I've come up with on my own is going to be strong against Menoth, having a fair amount of experience with Menoth myself.
Well, and there's two other teams minimum. No, actually, sorry, I take that back. Basically. One of the other GG teams has two Circle players on it, so you could potentially get matched up against us at some point. Yeah. I don't know how much more Circle will be there. It's interesting trying to meta for a 32-person event or whatever it's going to be.
Well, and
36-person, maybe.
I try not to get caught up in that stuff. I hate the idea of meta-ing because I know, no, Jake's going to be there. I better have something for Legion. Yeah. And then you don't see the guy all day.
Yeah.
You know, that just happens.
Well, I mean, sometimes you have to just meta for, like, what am I going to see in the semis and the finals?
Yeah. Well, I just don't want to meta myself out of getting to the semis or the finals.
I 100% agree. I've done it. I 100% agree. I've done it to where I've been like, I don't want to list lock myself, so I better play this bad list against Chuck because I don't want to list lock against Jake, you know, in the final. And, like, that's a stupid – just get past the guy in front of you, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like – professional sports playoffs where they're like, I don't know if we should start, you know, like in baseball, they're like, I don't want to run the ace out in game six because we need him for game seven.
Yeah,
just and then you lose game six and you're done.
Just win game six, right? Yeah, I gotcha. No, I agree. Well, that's cool. That's good. Like, I hadn't really thought about having people make lists. I mean, I've kind of been like, what do you guys think about this list?
Yeah, I've tried to basically not influence them, like, what do you think of this list? And then your buddy's like, oh, I guess it looks good to me.
Right.
No. It's putting it on them. Tell me what is the worst thing to see.
Yeah.
You know, you gave me telling information. You're like, I hate when you show me this.
Yeah.
You know, Reach Weapon Masters or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
I hate having halberdiers charge me from 15 inches away at mat 10, pal 14 with signs of importance.
Yeah. That's the thing to hate.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
You hate watching a Getarix and a Stalker melt to one charge?
Yeah. My Def 15 Armor 21 Getarix just exploding under, like, fucking six halberdiers charging him. Just, like, how did that happen? I'm still, like, baffled. Oh, God.
He's behind a wall, too.
That's why he was Def 15, because he was stone-skinned or whatever. But, yeah, that's just an example of what I was like, holy fuck, that was good. That's so good, man. And you just get this crazy turn of offensive output out of this 9-point unit at almost, like, unless they have a ton of screening, you're gonna get that 9 points back for sure.
Yeah.
So, and you can shoot through them too. So why the fuck not?
Yeah, why not?
Nah, they don't block on this side. Fuck
nah, they don't need
it's pretty
to.
Good. It's pretty good, man.
I love them.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good with her. No, I mean they're good with almost every caster in that faction, but
man, right,
really good with her.
Well, you got any more to add on to that?
No, I mean, I think, you know, we sort of discussed our philosophies a little bit, which I like. That's kind of more what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you kind of talked about, like, a caster you're going to play or your casters that you're considering playing. You know, and I'll talk a little bit about it, too. It's just like I was a lock on Chromac, right?
Yeah.
And that puts me in that, like, even though I'm not going to play him 80% of the time, I feel like I'm like, he covers a pretty good part of the field. That was my initial run on Chromac. I was like, I can run this like net list. It's got three big Warpulfs, the shrimps, the other stuff. And then I started playing Chromac with a little bit of a different build. It's doesn't crack armor as well, so it's a little more push towards killing infantry.
Uh-huh.
And I like that. And that's been the list I've been practicing mostly. So I'm like kind of used to that list now. So I was like, well, what covers this really well? And it was like a Baldur 1 list with, you know, Getaric Stalker, Megalith,
mm-hmm.
Blood Trackers. And that list crushes armor.
Yeah.
Fucking Mat 9, Pal 23 Getarics. Like, yeah. Oh, look, I teleported him and he killed two heavies.
Yeah.
You know, like, it legit happened.
He walks up and kills Colossals either.
Yeah, he killed Hyperion. He woke one round at a Hyperion. Yep. I mean, you know.
That was a sad day.
Yeah. Yeah. That list is very solid, but I started to see Menoth more. I went through a string where I played like five games against Menoth.
Yeah.
And I realized, I was like, well, Chromak is basically out, especially against Harvey. Just throw him against the wall. It's like a legit not good matchup. Unless your opponent's snoozing, they're going to know that too. Because it's just like everything in my army procs off all the killing your dudes, and I'd never do.
Right.
I, you know, played properly, getting Warpath triggers is almost never going to happen.
Right.
So, and Baldur 1, you know, I like him against Menoth, but I don't love him. So I started to experiment a little bit with Kruger 2, which is a super obvious pairing, Chromak Kruger 2. It's been happening since like the dawn of time.
Yeah.
You know, but it's new to me. So that's, and I'm sort of coming into, I'm understanding why people do that. Obviously, Morvana's on the table too, but probably not going to run her because I don't have enough reps with her.
Yeah.
Well,
you're just getting into the faction, and you need to. You're learning everything about the faction, not just learning a new caster or trying a particular list. You're still getting your first several activations on some of these models.
Yeah. One thing too that I found interesting when I was talking to Gaby, and I was like, you know, Kruger 2 is like fucking easy. Like I just like that guy. Like I don't have any trouble playing him. And he was just like, no, Kruger 2 is super hard to play well. And I was like, really? And I don't know if that's, I'm not disagreeing with him because I'm not saying I played as well as him.
Yeah.
I don't, but I might've just like stumbled onto a dude that just fits my style better.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who has extremely powerful options, but not tons of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, it's do I feed or do I not? How many TKs do I cast? Do I cast Stormwall? That's basically your turn.
Yeah.
Gallows.
His card's pretty short, right?
Yeah, Gallows. And Gallows is a spell that I will almost never cast.
Right.
And Lightning Storm is not bad, and especially not bad Geomancy, but it's a rare situation where you're casting Lightning Storms. I mean, you do it maybe early game. You throw out a couple, or if like you're playing against an army that doesn't have guns, you got more focus to play with. Maybe you throw out a couple.
Chromak, I think, falls probably into that same category of he only has like three spells on his card.
Chromak, the difference between Chromak has, it's like all upkeep driven, which is another thing that makes him really bad against Menoth, as opposed to Kruger that has no upkeeps at all.
Right.
Chromak has a lot more options, and they are...
Well, his list isn't flat or anything like that.
No.
It's more like, here's his trick that he does, and he does it really well.
Yeah.
He's going to Warpath stuff deep.
Yep.
And allow you to yo-yo it some because of your beast selection.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a lot. I feel like the activation of Chromak isn't a lot of thinking.
It actually, I disagree. That's the difference. Kruger is like, I'm going to Stormwall charge or Stormwall TK charge. Cool, my turn's over. Or Stormwall TK feet charge or something like that.
Yeah.
Chromak has so many spells that he wants out and so much nuance with where to place them that he could potentially just feat turn one just to get all his upkeeps out. That I've done it before. I don't know if it's good. I don't think so, but he also has the option of beast moding or not. He also has the option of on his feat turn, he can beast mode in the middle of the turn. Like he can spend the seven, then beast mode, right?
Yep.
I find him much more hard to play well than I do Kruger. I think Kruger is like, don't get him killed. And win because of the power of TK and Stormwall and, you know, the feat.
Yeah, fair. Right?
So that's why when Gabe said that to me, I thought it was interesting because I was like, oh, fine Kruger. There's a ton of nuance to Kruger. I mean, Kruger can do shit like, I TK this stone forward. Oops, now the triangle's got Getarex, now you're dead. Like, that's a play he has.
Yeah.
And it happens sometimes, and it's crazy. you know, or things like that, right? I mean, just he can manipulate the board so beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
But even just played at like 80% efficiency, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he's a race car that to me is easier to drive than, but driven well, he's going to win more races, right? But but Cromack to me, if I like didn't practice the shit out of that guy, I'm going to just fumble around. Like I've been practicing like on my kitchen table, just playing first turns with that dude. Cause I'm just like, against this matchup, which two upkeeps go out first, or does BCO go out first, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Seven focus, and he's got, if he casted all his spells, it would cost him like 12 or something, right? So he's got some serious decisions to make on turn one and onward. So, but anyway, so I mean, that's some of my thoughts, I guess. I haven't done the polling. I haven't pulled data from you, bros, which I think is an interesting idea. I'd also like to just ask you guys, like, maybe, what lists have I played that you thought were more effective than others or something like that?
Yeah, no, I think those are valuable things to get from your friends when you're preparing for a tournament. Depends on how competitive your buddies are, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't want to give up that information.
How, like, internally competitive? I don't know. I mean, I think it's super easy to just tell. Like, if your opponent, like, has that grimace, the grimace I have on my face when I'm playing against Harbinger, it's like with Circle.
I don't think Jarek needs to ask you.
No.
Just everything.
No.
You just say everything.
Yeah, when I just tilt out like mid-game for, you know, on something stupid, it's pretty obvious like that, okay, that's working because it's making him act crazy.
Yeah.
So, but again, I think the idea of having to make lists is pretty novel. I like that idea a lot. I think we're all good enough that, like, I can make a ret list that's probably somewhat effective. So at least here's an idea of what might be good.
Yeah, it's just trying not to bias you.
Yeah.
And have you just be a yes man.
Yeah. Right on, man. So, cool. Man, I think that covers the topics we want to talk. We've chit-chatted for almost a couple hours now, so.
Yeah, I think we're doing pretty good.
Cool. Well, we'll call it a day. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Warmans, Episode 2, Season 2.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in again.
Volume 2, Superman Undies episode.
All right, that's it.
Warmans!
Yeah, I'm actually going to take a piss break, so why don't you discuss your pairing for a second.
All right, I'll discuss my pairing while Brian takes a piss break. No doubt unleashing Clark Kent on the fucking toilet.